was strong. But given enough time and the right kinds of pressure, an Ordo Psyker almost always got the answers he or she was looking for. A bead of sweat rolled down Lyndon's neck. No respite from the heat in here. The interior of the crude structure was baking hot. A single room, 12 meters by 7. The walls thick, the floor rockcrete, solid. Probably soundproofed and scan-shielded, too. The interrogator and his team weren't sloppy. They'd have prepped the place well. Oil stains on the rockcrete floor, heavy-duty pulleys attached to the rafters. The place had likely been used for vehicle repair or storage in the past. Metal slats high in the walls were tilted inwards a few degrees. Through them, spears of hot midday sun sliced into the room, muted by the grime on the windows, but still bright enough to leave trails when Lyndon closed his eyes. The windows were high, the glass clouded and milky. No one would be seeing in.
"Trying to help you here," Bastogne continued. "The Ordo takes care of its own."
"Grok shit," thought Lyndon. Everyone in the Ordo knew the truth. The larger factions within warred constantly for power and control. He pressed his lips together, felt pain where the lower lip had been split in the scuffle of his kidnap, and resplit in the subsequent beatings. He hurt all over. It got worse every time they dragged him up out of that hole and smacked him awake. And it wasn't going to get better. Dust motes danced a slow waltz in the air, moving gracefully on the interplay of warm microcurrents. Time seemed to pass at a crawl in here. Before the beginning of this morning's round of questions, he had lain with hands and feet bound, a black sack tied over his head. They gave him food and water, just barely enough to keep him functional. Isolated and blindfolded, most hostages quickly lose track of time, Lyndon knew. It was a common technique, all part of breaking them down. But mental timekeeping had been an early part of Lyndon's basic training. By his count, they'd been holding him for 3 days and 6 hours. And that meant alarm bells were ringing loud and clear elsewhere. There was a sudden hard yank on his outstretched left arm. A surge of fresh pain followed, as rough rope bit into his wrist. The masked thug holding the left rope had adjusted his grip. Now the one on the right, just as powerfully built and identically masked, shifted his grip. And more of Lyndon's nerves sang out. It was only these ropes and the graft-muscled brutes holding them that kept him upright. He no longer had the energy to do so himself. He suspected several bad fractures in his legs. Simple-minded thugs, brute force, no finesse. Had he not been bound and injured, he could have killed both in a matter of seconds. But here he was, strung to pulleys in the ceiling, stripped to the waist, face bruised and swollen, cuts and contusions all over. He was limp, beaten as badly as he'd ever been. Clever of them to use that paralytic when they did the snatch. It's what he would have done. They had placed a false tail on him at the port. Just clumsy enough to be noticed, not clumsy enough to be a clear dupe. While Lyndon had been busy avoiding the more obvious tail, he hadn't spotted the snatch team. He should have known they'd never trust his capture to just one man. Sloppy. And now he was paying for it. But he wouldn't let her ladyship suffer for his mistake. There had been no time to bite down on the cyanide tooth. The paralytic they'd hit him with had been so fast-acting, so potent. Neurox nicarthadrine, or some new derivative. He was unconscious before his head hit the street. While he'd been out cold, they'd extracted the tooth. The fact that he was still breathing meant they'd also nullified the tiny cortex